Given the risks it takes to put up any building, in terms of time, labor, and capital, it's critical to accurately project the future, to have foresight into a market and the global economy, into the price and availability of raw materials and workforce, into the minds of investors and tenants. And that's why now, a time of real volatility, it's important to dig into the business of construction. On this episode, perspectives on the present and future with leaders who are in the trenches every day, assessing the risks and realities facing the construction industry. Our panel includes Lisa Russo, head of construction at the Community Preservation Corporation, a New York lender and developer founded in the 1970s.
We are the largest in the country, and we were mission-oriented, and we have a deep commitment to preserving, refinancing, and rehabbing the affordable housing inventory stock.
And then there's Damian Watch, vice president of PGIM Real Estate and head of commercial real estate risk management.
We do pretty much the whole gamut, from equity to pref equity, mezzanine, and then debt lending.
And last, but certainly not least, Michael Hardman, head of customer management at Turner & Townsend.
We are the largest and the best provider of cost management, project management, and program management services globally for all real estate segments.
Coming up, we offer you a seat alongside a live audience of colleagues and clients at an event co-sponsored by Turner & Townsend at CBRE's New York office in late April. We deconstruct headline issues in the construction business to help you build your knowledge base and decision-making. I'm Spencer Levy, and that's right now on The Weekly Take.
Welcome to The Weekly Take, and we are delighted to be here today in New York City to talk construction costs, which may be the number one issue in real estate at the moment. And to help us with this, we have three terrific guests, Michael Hardman, Lisa Russo, and Damian Watch. So Mike, let's start with you and let's just go right to it. The reason why this episode is so important is all of the volatility in the market, a lot of it's due to interest rates, but more recently due to tariffs. In a few words, in summary, where are we today with construction costs as a result of tariffs, interest rates, and the current volatility?
Volatility is probably the right word, really, Spencer. I think we're still figuring it all out, really. It's not doom and gloom, but there is nervousness. You know, people are nervous about what they're spending, what they're buying. Supply chains are nervous, contractors are nervous. It's a little bit better than it was a few weeks ago. We have had some relief, but we have got a big elephant in the roof still and big horizon coming up that everyone's looking at to kind of figure out what's going to happen next.
Lisa, what's your current perspective on the volatility, tariffs, interest rates? How is that impacting your business?
It is the elephant in the room, the tariff impact. But I think when we look at it and really hone in on what is the actual impact on various trades based upon where the materials are originating from historically and what we could predict going forward. We also have to remember tariffs aren't new. Tariffs were introduced in the first Trump administration. They were a bit more targeted than perhaps the current scenario, but we know how to deal with it. And then on top of that, we had a lot of lessons learned during COVID and supply chain disruptions. And many of us effectively managed our construction projects through that phase as well. So we're lucky in a way in that having market instability is not a new thing for construction lenders. The risk has been historic for many, many years. And I think we just have to use the lessons learned.
Damon, same question to your point of view on where we stand.
I agree with everything Michael said. I think it's too early to tell how much of an impact for tariffs will have on construction in the U.S. But we're having our cost review consultants go back and reevaluate the budget, particularly with respect to tariffs. The first step is we ask three questions. What kind of construction contract is it? Is it a stipulated sum contract or is it a cost plus P with a GMP? That makes a big difference. We're assuming that a stipulated sum contract will have more protection for the owner from import fees. The second issue is what's being bought out. You know, if the trades have signed contracts, so that their budget is supported by a signed contract as opposed to a particular discipline or trade that they're still negotiating the contract between different parties. That's not bought out. If your project is 80% bought out, that means 80% of the hard costs are supported by signed contracts. And so from that point forward, the tariff question is almost more of a legal analysis because the biggest issue is, well, how strong do those contracts, your address, force majeure, for example? And the third question we ask up front is it concrete, the frame? Is it concrete construction of the steel wood frame? Because it looks like concrete is a much safer material with respect to tariffs and imported materials. So those are the big three questions we have up front.
So let me put a finer point on this. First of all, for purposes of our show, because I hear my producer ringing in my ears, a GMP contract is guaranteed maximum price. Cost plus is what it says. It's the cost plus some other percent. So those are the two basic types.
Almost all commercial construction in the U.S. is one of those two.
I am hearing some large developers who are putting not just pencils down, but shovels now, meaning that they don't know what the cost of their materials are. Now, let me just put it right out there. Are you hearing people stopping their jobs at the moment because of these cost concerns?
Yeah, definitely. I wouldn't say completely stopping. I'd say probably pausing more than anything. And again, to get as much handle as we can on the contract situation, where you are with your procurements, what certainty you've got on those costs. You know, there's different ways and strategies to get around it. We are seeing clients pull the trigger earlier on materials, get materials reported in stores, take the hit now rather than kind of have any uncertainty moving forward. We are seeing smarter ways of procurement probably, which isn't a bad thing. It's not necessarily down to tariff either. We're always being challenged about costs, how to get more efficiency, how to get better costs, how to do things quicker and cheaper. So tariffs is now a part of that.
How do you see it, Lisa?
We haven't really honestly seen a slowdown in the lending platform that we work in at the moment. And that's because by the time it gets to us, these projects are already years in pre-development. And the financial structure is pretty well baked. And hopefully there's been a little bit of cushion built into it to allow for inflation or some unpredictability of the market. I think an excellent case can be made that nobody forecasted where we currently are. Although if you would have kind of listened to what was being said, you might be able to say you should have done. But that being said, what we are doing when the project comes to us, it's pretty much ready. We're ready to close. We are ready to start the work. So how do we mitigate that risk? And one of the things was the request for stored materials and early deposits. A way to mitigate some of the risk exposure that contractors are seeing is that they're asking us as the lender to approve very, very large stored material funding requests, even at loan closing. I've had millions and millions of dollars being presented as an exhibit in a contract saying, lender, you're just going to approve all this because we need it. And the position that CPC is taking is, while I think that's probably a good idea, it has to be very, very specific. I really have to know the details. I need it demonstrated with backup documentation. I want to know, how are you going to protect this? Where are you going to store it? Is it going to be on-site or off-site? And I have to make sure that there's sufficient insurance coverage, because that's money that's going to be outside, not brought into the construction project very early on, and the risk exposure can be great. In the space that we operate in, especially in New York City, most of our contracts are not GMP type. They're actually fixed, stipulated in some type contracts, which historically have been closed book, which means the contractor did not have to share with anybody ownership, especially the lender, their subcontracts. So when you start saying to your contractor, okay, demonstrate, give me your 80% executed subcontract so I can validate the price, there is inherent resistance to do that because now they're showing what their actual prices are. But that's something that we're dictating the terms are. This is something that's necessary to protect the risk to the ownership and the lender. You have to participate in the exercise. So we're looking for a higher degree of contract buyout at loan closing. And we're being as flexible as makes sense on a project reburning stored material deposits.
Damien, you open the door to what is the biggest issue at the moment, which is real scrutiny of contracts. And the scrutiny of contracts reminds me of two other case studies. One of them was COVID, when people that had business interruption insurance realized that their business interruption insurance might not cover COVID. And the other was something that does keep me up at night, was the Y2K thing. You remember the Y2K thing? Back in the late 90s, when we were writing leases in New York City, we used to put a clause in there called the Y2K clause, that on the moment that the clock struck midnight on January 1, 2000,
everything was supposed to stop in New York City. Every elevator, every escalator, everything would. I mean, a clause in there, what would happen? And I spent years writing that clause. And you know what happened? Nothing. Now, I think this is way different than that, but I do think this is similar to a COVID moment of restructuring contracts. What do you think, Davey?
We learned a lot from COVID. I've been reviewing contracts, as you imagine, in the last 2 weeks. It's typically, if you use the AIA contract, and let me explain, imagine the City of Architects developed a form of contracts, and they're pretty widely used in the industry. Even if a project doesn't use AIA contracts, they at least mimic them correctly. Anyways, the general conditions of 201 contract, Section 8 deals with a force majeure. It deals with, you know, unanticipated issues that come up during construction. The contract used to be pretty specific about a force majeure event. And that's why, as I've been reading contracts the last 2 weeks, they often list various acts of God, unforeseen events, you know, hurricanes, typhoons, earthquakes, government intervention, and pandemics. That's my point. The word pandemic is now in many contracts as a list. And so the lesson I think many contractors, subcontractors learned 4 years ago, perhaps in a bad way for them, is if it's not listed out, the force majeure cause has to be fairly specific. They have to have anticipated this particular type of event. Many subs were unsuccessful in arguing COVID issues as a force majeure because no one had anticipated that. So now they've anticipated that. You see pandemic as a listed item in a force majeure clause, but many of them, to our point today, don't necessarily mention tariffs at all, or import duties, or shipping delays, or government intervention, which all those may trigger, again, I'm not a lawyer, but they may be the right statements for a subcontractor to put in their contract. So it's, no one really knows at this point, we're way too early, but our take is you have to read the contract to see how specific are they with force majeure.
Michael, given all the uncertainty we just talked about, what advice do you give to the clients?
I think a lot of it is trust. I think a lot of it ultimately does come down to a cost factor, right? You break everyone else's hand, it's about cost, it's about viability of projects and the cost associated with that. I think sometimes we just have to be, you know, a bit more of a partner in the whole supply chain, to be honest. I think don't panic is a kind of key point. I think speak to the supply chain and partner properly. Have a real base, deep understanding of your costs and what those costs should be. I think that's how we move forward.
Lisa, let me turn to you now on the cost of capital side. So I know this panel is primarily focused on tariffs, but we've had massive volatility in interest rates, massive volatility in spreads. Tell us how the volatility in the interest rate markets have impacted you.
I'm an engineer, so let me just start it that way. I'm not the financial whiz in the room, but I will tell you that as cost of capital goes up, the funding I have to complete my project goes down. And the risks associated with completing my project, unfortunately, do not coincide with that. So I would definitely say that over the past 20 years or so, construction risk has only grown. We've layered upon layer regulation, requirements, climate resiliency, energy efficiency requirements, but the capital that's available to do these projects hasn't necessarily coincided with that. As the rates go up, the opportunities to find alternate sources for some of our funding has been presented to us. We do a lot of subsidy matching with the state and the federal government. We look for creative ways of bringing in other financial incentives to a project, perhaps a way to kind of close the gap, so to speak, is that we make the building more resilient or energy efficient. What are the requirements for that funding source? Let's bring in. Sometimes that's low interest capital that can help kind of water down the funding stack to make the project doable. But if, you know, we're going to be looking at going forward and if the cost of these projects is going to ever increase from not just the cost of the capital, but also the cost of the more materials and the services, it's going to be problematic. I really don't have a crystal ball as to how we are going to best prepare for that, but I think we will do what we've done in the past is we're just going to get creative and we're going to look for other funding sources to help fill those gaps and to make a better built building.
Damon, back to you. Same general question. What's some of the advice you're giving clients today to navigate the volatility for some of these issues beyond just tariffs?
You want to make sure you have competent developer, for one. It's really important to be seasoned, to know how to adjust with something comes up like a tariff issue. Like, you know, the windows aren't going to show up on time. You know, there could be a month delayed because of the tariff issues and they're aborted. So having competent owner, developer, and contractor is really key. We also, on the investment side, are trying to put in more safety features, increased contingency.
Just define what a contingency is and what a contingency, the size of it. Sometimes a contingency is 5%, 10%, 15%. Explain what a contingency is in a construction contract, how that might be changed.
So a contingency is the money you put aside to spend if things go really bad during construction. Unforeseen circumstances. The general contractor typically has his own contingency, which he or she is very unwilling to spend. They're not going to touch that unless they absolutely have to. And then the developer, the equity or the ownership side has their own contingency. So typically the lenders and the other investors are relying on the developer's contingency. So getting back to what we're talking about here is tariffs, is if there's a project and the electrician and the mechanical contractor are both heavily relying on equipment from China for their contract. So nothing's gone wrong, you know, right now, but there's just an additional risk because of the tariff issue. Some other features that we had when we're on the debt side and not the equity side, we'd like to push our equity colleagues to delay receiving their developer's fee. The unspoken assumption is things go really bad and we're out of contingency, we're going to tap into your fee. So delayed development fees is another issue. Performance and payment bonds are also another tool, I suppose, we could work to.
So you just listed a whole bunch of tools here to mitigate risk. You mentioned delaying payment of the developer fee. You said having larger contingencies. You also mentioned payment and performance bonds. And these payment and performance bonds, and for the benefit of the audience, just tell us how one of those works.
The concept is you want to build a building and you really like the carpenter, but there's a small firm, don't have much credit. So you're worried that they might go under halfway through the job and then you're stuck. So that contractor, the carpenter, will go out and get a surety to bond them. The surety promises if this carpenter goes under for some reason or defaults on the contract, the surety will step in and finish the work. There's several different ways they can do that, but that's the basic concept.
The surety bond also cover the materials?
Let me step back. It covers payment and performance. So if for some reason that subcontractor can't perform, like for example, the windows that they're installing are stuck in a port in China because they can't get over here, then they default under their performance of their contract. So then the surety would come in and fix it. Typically, they would bring in a separate trade to do the work. If the windows don't go in time, then you can't put up the electrical, you know, mechanical, the shoebox, carpeting. Everything gets delayed. So you can imagine the catastrophic impact over having a project if the windows don't show up on time.
Michael, I think we've covered the tariff topic fairly well, but you covered several other topics that are going to be impacted. One that I found fascinating was on how immigration impacts certain subcontractors. So yeah, we're talking about tariffs. Tell us about how labor may impact the construction trades.
Tariffs are obviously an elephant in the room, but I would say labor and the actual cost of the labor. It's only availability as well. Cost is one thing, availability is another thing, is key at the moment. We're definitely seeing domestic labor prices increase.
Lisa, affordable housing is your area of expertise. Tell us about some of the challenges and opportunities from your perspective of your career in affordable housing development here in New York City.
Affordable housing is timeless. It is probably more critical today that we address. It's a nationwide problem. It's not regional. It's not a Washington, D.C. problem or a Oklahoma problem. It is a universal problem all throughout the United States. The good thing with CPC is we have a lot of experience. We've been doing this for 51 years. We started off as a very localized affordable housing lender right here in New York City, and we're now national. What's happening through the past years is that bigger developers, like Related, see the opportunity to invest in affordable housing. The developers, the contractors that we're beginning to work with are actually getting much savvier and much more seasoned. They're much larger in their ability to handle any type of disruptions that are being thrown at us, whether it be COVID or pandemic or tariff related. The challenge, though, with it, it is a very specific market. Sometimes the affordable housing has certain requirements for supportive housing or state financing that is dictating how the space needs to look and how space needs to behave. So that doesn't give developers a lot of ability to kind of customize what the housing looks like. They kind of have to stay within a certain type of model. A lot of the projects are taking place within urban settings, and there's challenges with that. But we're dealing with a more stable or, you know, more traditional building methodology that is a little bit more resistant to price fluctuations. And it has allowed us to continue to work. Even during COVID, when lots of industries were mandated to stop construction, affordable housing is deemed essential and it was allowed to continue, which was critical to our particular sector.
Ding in, global variation is very wide when it comes to materials, when it comes to labor. Can you just talk us through a little bit how that works? Why is there so much local market variation, even in some base materials like wood or steel?
There's two big factors. One is, of course, the ease of shipping. A second, believe it or not, is green buildings, LEED certification, and the other types of green building certification. There's also a remarkable difference in the contractors. You know, general contracting is still a local profession, and major contractors have subcontractors they work with, sort of like a consortium. They generally work in one area, and they're very, very good at what they do in that area. That means you can have a wide variety of skill sets and then costs based on which city you're in. Construction is a local business in the U.S.
One thing we didn't touch on here, Michael, so I'm going to ask you a two-part question. Specific about asset type, and then secondly, final thoughts, but data centers are going gangbusters versus the other asset types in terms of the total amount of new construction. You expect that to continue, given that there are so many finished goods within data centers versus, say, an industrial building, which is much simpler? And other final thoughts you might want to share with our audience?
Yeah, sure. Do we expect it to continue? Yes, absolutely. There's so much demand to data centers right now, powered by AI, and ultimately, it's a necessity. Final thoughts, it's just all about not panicking, being not risk averse, but holding good allowances, holding good contingency, but also just not accepting cost. You know, I would say that's my takeaway, really.
Lisa, final thoughts, please.
We've been here before. We have been in unpredictable, unforeseen sets of circumstances before, and we have successfully navigated it. We've learned a lot. There's a lot of lessons from the past we can kind of dust off and use again. My advice to anybody in construction risk management, know your projects. Know your development team, how your construction is being made. Know the players. Talk about the suppliers. Talk about subcontractors. Talk about contingency plans. What's the plan if you can't procure this material in the price that you budgeted for? Listen, ask good questions, and then be flexible. We're not going to stop. That's really not an option. We're going to continue to move forward, but we're just going to get smarter, and we're going to do it a little bit wiser. And in, you know, 5 years from now, we're going to look back on this time and say, yeah, we got through that, and we'll be ready for the next thing that's on the horizon.
Well, on behalf of the Weekly Take and on behalf of our friends at Turner & Townsend, this is wonderful event. Thank you for all being a terrific audience for the Weekly Take. Let's hear it for our panel. To keep on building your knowledge base, there's related content available on our website, cbre.com/theweeklytake. And in the weeks ahead, we'll be delivering new episodes to inform and help you manage your real estate thinking with tools and tactics for our time. That includes shows on workplace, residential and other sectors, and multiple investment center topics with key strategic insights. So stay tuned. Make sure to subscribe and share the show, and let us know what you're interested in by rating and reviewing The Weekly Take wherever you listen. You can also drop us a line through our website or by finding us on LinkedIn as well. Thanks for tuning in. We look forward to having you back next week. I'm Spencer Levy. Be smart, be safe, be well.